Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to Elder Talk. This week we're going to talk about probably one of the biggest concerns, I think, facing policymakers and facing individuals as they age, and that's how do we accommodate the special needs that people develop as they grow older. We know that we will all be less capable of taking care of ourselves as we grow older and older. A few of us may pass along suddenly and at a time when we've not perhaps degenerated very far. Mm-hmm. Some of us think, you know, that's the way I want to go. But sometimes that means going sooner.
Right.
And others, you know, others of us can be pretty confident that there's going to be a period of time when we won't be as self-sufficient, when we'll need the help of other people. So there are lots of discussion taking place across the country, especially among policymakers. And many individuals and communities are trying to figure out how do we meet the needs of this incredibly fast-growing population, the people age 65 and older, which I think many people are aware, 10,000 people a day, 10,000 baby boomers.
Every single day.
Turn 65.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge number. And we want to talk through some of the challenges. I'm glad to see that there's been a lot of reporting on this issue. As we started looking at this, Susan, Arthur, we saw that there were articles that appeared in Wall Street Journal recently, two, in fact, in the past 10 days, talking generally about this issue of caring for the elderly and who's going to do it. And you've seen similar articles.
I have seen similar articles. In researching for today's show, I came across a word that I had not heard, actually a phrase that I had not heard, and that was elder orphans. And that is defined as an aging adult who doesn't have kids at home or a spouse or adult children who are close by. And I came across some really surprising statistics that about 42% to 43% of people are senior adults are in that situation where they don't have a spouse or they don't have adult children close by, either by choice or they are estranged or just not living in the area. And that's a huge problem as we age and something to look at because there aren't going to be kids coming along to help.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. It's one of those things that you don't think about when you're young. And I have to tell you that I was conscious when I had kids that I even said to them only half jokingly as they grew up that you know I expect you all to take care of me and your mother someday.
They probably rolled their eyes at that time.
They did, and hopefully they won't roll their eyes then when the time comes. But I think that people who don't have children or have children that are estranged, but I'm thinking of several couples I know who are in their 70s and early 80s who don't have children at all.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about children are not available to help, then who is it that's going to come in and give the sort of attention that you hope will be given to your needs as you age and become more vulnerable?
Yeah, and I do think that's just something, you know, years ago, I remember my grandmother. Everybody lived close. Everyone lived close. When my great-grandmother became ill, she moved into the duplex with my grandmother and grandfather, and one lived downstairs, and she'd run up and downstairs. As she passed, a great-aunt moved in. I mean, it just was kind of a revolving door of people, older
family
people.
Family members. And it was multi-generational.
Multi-generational. You know, my great-grandmother apparently helped raise my dad and all of that. But that is not the case anymore at all.
Sadly, I'm afraid those days are gone. But you're right. At one time, the families regarded it as entirely their responsibility. Mm-hmm. They didn't regard the government as having any role whatsoever. And now, you know, whatever your politics, I think we see that in the absence of the family being as proximate as it was at one time, your family members stayed in the same area and you're having relationships and mutual dependencies and whatnot. it was a realistic plan to not have either state or federal government involved. Now I think that many people look to some sort of public support to meet these needs. And in some cases, it's the only possible source from which it might come. You know, we shouldn't fail to mention churches at one time. Mm-hmm. Whether you're Jewish or Christian or Muslim or whatever, yeah, you could count on, if you were involved in your worship, in a place of worship, if you had a spiritual family, so to speak, and this may still be true, if you do have that spiritual family, then you can count on some degree of mutual support. Some churches are stronger than others. But I think pretty much families of faith, for the most part, are far more likely to care for each other than those that are not.
Well, I would agree. I actually know a personal example where a family in our church has adopted, so to speak, the older woman that used to live across the street from them. She has no family around, never either not married now or never was. I don't remember. But they have moved her in even and are willing to do the hard work of taking care of her. And she's not always the easiest person to take care of, but yet they are doing it because they feel like it's their Christian duty and they have made a relationship with her and they want to do the right thing with her.
Yeah, I think that there's a chicken or the egg argument. Those who feel that more state and federal assistance is appropriate and needed here, you know, is that because the churches were not doing as much as they used to do, as many people who are proponents of more public support, they would say. They would say, look, churches are not what they used to be. But it may be, in fact, that perhaps as that public availability grew, churches shrank in terms of their perceived role in fulfilling those things. But I think that clearly that is a source to which many people today can turn, is their churches. But in the absence of that, for whatever reason, I think that we know that there's a place for public benefits, primarily federal, incidentally, on this topic, but there are state and federal. But what I think is overwhelming the support system is that there's just not the supply of services that's meeting the demand. You know, as we increase, we're going to see the population above age 65 break 20% in the next 6 years. I mean, think about it. 20% of the whole population would be what would be termed elderly. And as this grows, you're going to have a lot more people who are on the wagon than there are pulling,
right,
to use a phrase that I think it was Phil Graham one time said. But so we need more people to get off and pull. But these people can't get off and pull.
Exactly.
Some can. And I'm sure it's beneficial to them to pull. By that, I mean, you know, to the extent that we can stay productive, to the extent that we can stay, have a meaningful role in our support, I think that that's healthy. So what we wanted to talk about today are, what are some of the solutions that are available to people who find themselves very vulnerable? And these people don't have children to turn to, or as you point out, in some cases, maybe it could be an estranged relationship. Maybe the kids have just moved away and they don't consider themselves estranged. They just are not coming back to help.
They're just not involved.
Yeah. So for these people, we are going to have to craft a solution, because it is our problem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a societal problem that we need to address. And this is being debated a lot. It's being debated in Congress as to, you know, are there programs we need to create? Others are saying, no, this should be a private sector solution. Churches, again, we should mention that there are a number of churches that have started programs where they're reaching in the community. And there are secular not-for-profit organizations that are providing meals and other things to people who there's a service in St. Louis where they come around, repair houses.
St. Louis County and St. Louis City both have area aging, I'm not sure the exact name, but councils on aging, and you can contact them for repairs or meals or activities. And they're separate. So they're two separate entities, but so you have to do whichever place that you live. So if you live in the city, contact the city.
But city department or council of aging, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But so that is a public solution, but there are some private counterparts that are struggling to be helpful. But I think that as we recognize this problem, we know that it goes beyond simply a need for physical things. There's the emotional impact.
Oh, exactly. When you're by yourself, I mean, one of the biggest problems that people have as they age is loneliness and isolation. I mean, that is completely, when you can't get out and when you can't drive or you can't do those things, you know, we all talk about wanting to age in place, but loneliness can be so detrimental to your health. Another thing that people sometimes struggle with is abuse and who's going to intervene for them when they can't do that for themselves.
And that's the whole thing about this phenomenon of aging in place. And that maybe is when we think about this problem, if we think about it from the starting point that in excess of a study done in 2010 by ARP showed that 86% to 88% of people over 65 state that their primary goal is they want to age in place. They want to be at home as long as they can. Mm-hmm. So if we recognize that everyone, for the most part, is trying to do this, then we have to think, well, what vulnerabilities are there with such an effort, and among the things are, as you mentioned, the psychological, the mental health impact. Mm-hmm. This article of the Wall Street Journal, when was this appeared? December 11th. Mm-hmm. It's called the Loneliest Generation. Americans more than ever are aging alone, and they talk this. And the article points out that baby boomers are aging alone more than any generation in the U.S. And they characterize this as a growing public threat because of its implications, both for their physical health and their psychological health.
Well, and listen to this statistic. 1 out of 11 Americans 50 or older lacks a spouse, partner, or living child. And so, I mean, that's almost 10%. One out of 11.
11.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
And so if you take away a spouse and a child, this person's vulnerable.
Exactly.
They're old. And there's no child and no spouse. That is a combination for accidents to happen without discovery, depression. Mm-hmm. And yet these people are among those who are saying, I want to be in my home. That's important to me as a value. So people are finding that in some cases they will turn to people in a similar situation because that's what they have in common. My mother and father lived in Florida, in Fort Myers, until recently, and they moved back. And it brought home to me the fact that this move to Florida, that many older people, not just Florida, but South, Sunshine, that many people as they age aspire to and increasingly are in fact doing, I didn't realize that that's a round trip. But it is.
And
my parents didn't realize that either.
Right.
When you go, you're going down there at a time, in all likelihood, when you're pretty mobile, you can get about, you can do things, you're determined to enjoy, you know, this more amenable climate. And they did. They had 15 wonderful years in Florida. So those of you who are thinking about maybe a trip south, what I've seen of it, my family and others, is that it can be a wonderful time. And for them it was. But they didn't think about, nor did I, about that next step. What happens when they become more and more vulnerable as they age? When they can't drive as well? When my dad can't walk as well? Mm-hmm. Who is it that's going to come in? And then this ties in with the point we were making a moment ago, is that often people without children around will rely on each other, similarly situated. Mm-hmm. So, and that's exactly what happens in these communities. So, I mean, the upside of it is that these older people are really determined to help each other. There's a sense of togetherness. There really is. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of we're in this together. And they take an interest in each other's health, and they come over and do things. But the bottom line is, it is the, I don't want to say the blind leading the blind, it's people who are very vulnerable helping each other.
Right.
And while a good thing, it's not a particularly reliable thing. So what was happening over time is that these people were dying off. Mm-hmm. That my parents, you know, they grieved over this. They became close to these people. You know, a real bond, I'll tell
exactly.
you, that I saw in their little condo development that I suspect is happening all across the South, to some extent in the South. And over time, they realized, though, that as the people they loved or that they grew to be close friends with were dying, that they, if they were going to be able to have the assistance they need, they had two sons, my brother and I, who were more than happy to do what we could for them, but it meant traveling back north.
Exactly.
So it is a round trip often.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, that's, as you were talking, I thought, you know, this doesn't happen overnight. It's normally a progression. And so you move from independence to interdependence to maybe dependence. And so mm-hmm. in each one of those stages, you know, we need to plan ahead. We need to maybe think a little bit more about that next.
What change is necessary at each stage?
Exactly. And if I really do want to age in place, or I don't want to have to move back north, what steps do I need to take and put in place in order to accomplish that?
Yeah. And if you're just, if you've planted your feet and you've said through all those stages, I intend to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Then it does mean thinking creatively, and for some people, not realistically.
Right.
I mean, there are some people that plan just is not realistic, but others who have a lot of money, and I say that because it can be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
While you can have at your home, through your home in private care, it's possible to have close to skilled care levels of assistance. By skilled care, that's what we call a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
Not ever completely, of course, because
right.
you have equipment and capabilities and whatnot. But you can meet that demand to a good extent if you're willing to spend a ton of money, because it's incredibly inefficient
mm-hmm.
to bring in some of this equipment and have these professionals come individually. When you think of the inefficiencies of that versus being in a single facility on a single floor and many people sharing these equipment, et cetera. So on the one hand, many people aspire to live at home, and a few of those can afford to perhaps do it most, if not the whole way. Many people, it's just not realistic to pay for that sort of care at home.
Well, and I think when it becomes evident that it's not very realistic to actually stay and remain in place and do everything at home, that's where I think, again, that planning and preparation is a vital thing. Because then once you can have the decisions. You can make the decisions. You can look at the assisted living. You can look at the independent or the continuum of care or what type of nursing facility you might like
mm-hmm.
during that phase where you're still pretty independent.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a really good plan to have in place.
Would
you agree? Is that kind of the best thing to do is to plan ahead like that? Or
I mean, of course, it definitely makes sense to plan ahead. Some people decide that they're going to err on the side of optimism, and they figure that we'll take a chance and we're going to make it. Others take the position that, look, I know that I'm going to degenerate over time and my dependency will grow over time, and so I'm going to be willing to give up this place where I feel most at home, and I'm going to move to a continuing care retirement community. And they're sometimes called CCRCs. We've talked about them previously on this show, and they're very popular now for a lot of people. They don't all have to be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a range of prices, but what's nice is that when you move in at the level you need at that time, which could be independent living. So if you move into essentially an apartment, an independent living apartment, then you're going to pay not much more than you would pay for any other apartment of comparable quality. And then there's this next gradation in which you go to assisted living. And it's this all in the same development. So you have a place assured, essentially, for each of these stages that you might or might not need.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are people who move into that independent living and perhaps they live a significant period of time there. But whether it's through a stroke or heart attack, something happens and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So they never moved beyond that point. Others they'll move in perhaps at that stage and they will progress to assisted living. And then finally there's an intermediate care, which is still a form of a nursing home typically. And then there's skilled care. So the skilled care is the point where if you live long enough and you have serious disabilities or whatnot physically, then there's a good chance you'll end up there. But you're assured a place, and it's all taking place in a single community with some familiar faces along the way.
A question I have is, let's say I don't have anyone else. I'm by myself and I decide to move into one of these. I've taken the first step. Do you know who would determine when it's time for me to go to the next level? I mean, so much of the time it's a family member who says, Mom, you know, really, you're not doing well, or we need to make this decision. But I'm thinking, if you don't have that, would the facility itself say, hey, you yeah. need to do this? Or, I mean, I'm going to assume that you should probably have some documents in place where someone can be that advocate for you.
Well, and there's from the legal standpoint, somebody you need to have a durable power of attorney with. And we've talked about, you know, these key items that need to be in place from a legal perspective. And this, maybe the legal piece isn't going to drive the decision, but there's some things that just got to be in place. And if they're not in place, it's an invitation for someone, and it could even be a facility who is filing an action with a court to have someone appointed as your conservator. And I think that is probably what would happen in the absence of a power of attorney, where you move into such a facility, something happens, perhaps, you know, traumatically or whatever, and suddenly or more slowly, you're incompetent.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could see certainly someone making an accusation of, well, you just want to get the higher rent or something like that. I mean, if the facility itself is making that decision, it seems yeah. like somebody would have to be the one to make that decision.
They would. And I can assure you that these facilities are very fastidious about assuring that people who move in have in place certain documents, mm-hmm. documents about health care, documents about a durable power of attorney relating to financial and legal decisions. They want these documents in place because a nightmare for them financially and otherwise is on those occasions, if they ever allow it to happen, where someone does become effectively incompetent. This facility is not, they're very reluctant to be the ones who make a decision like that. It's not appropriate for them. They don't want to make it, and they know they're vulnerable to a lot of accusations mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. they do. So their lawyers are going to say, no, you go to the courthouse, you commence an action, which they could. They're, quote-unquote, an interested person. They can file an action in a probate court in the county in which the facility is and ask for a guardian and a conservator to be appointed. Then, at that point, the facility can say to the conservator or guardian, we feel this person cannot continue to live in assisted living. We think they need to go to a skilled care facility. They're reluctant to do so. They're not competent to make the decision. You tell us what you want to happen. And then from a legal perspective, they're completely covered. Mm-hmm. So if you decide to implement a plan, whether it's a plan that begins with your living at home without assistance, and yet with an eye to the place you'll go next, then you need to have all those plans backstopped with these documents. And there aren't a lot of them, as we've talked before, but if there's anything that bears repeating on this show, and even more often for those who aren't acting, is that you've got to have a durable power of attorney if you're wanting to avoid having people you don't know and perhaps you don't approve of making decisions for you about your life. And this is not just a message for someone who's 88 years old and perhaps a little more vulnerable to some of these things than someone who's 58. It's applicable to all of us, because we all could have an incident that occurs, whether it's a car accident, whatever form it might take, where we become incompetent and we've essentially sentenced our loved ones or heaven forbid, even others to go to court and to pursue someone being appointed to make decisions for us.
I think most of the time we would typically choose a family member to be that advocate for us. What do you do in these situations where you're the elder orphan, as we've been talking about?
Elder orphan. You know, that is an interesting phrase.
It's an interesting
I'd never
phrase.
Heard it before.
Well, it's all over the internet, and there are lots and lots of articles written about it.
But it's a great phrase.
It is, because we all certainly know what an orphan feels like.
Yeah.
And this would just be someone who's a little bit older.
And it really captures it, because you think how vulnerable, you hear the word orphan, and you think, wow, such mm-hmm. a person is so vulnerable, someone should run in to assist them. And that's exactly the situation of an elderly person on the other end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great phrase.
It is.
Elder
it is.
Orphan.
And so my question then is, how do they determine, or who can they choose? What if they don't feel like they have anyone that they really would trust with that? Is an attorney a good option? Would a physician be a good option to be your healthcare decision maker, or how would that, I mean, I can see some people just saying, you know what, I don't really have anything. I'm not going to do anything.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll come back in a minute and we'll talk about that. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back. Back with Elder Talk. And today we're talking about this whole issue of aging in place and the fact that from a societal standpoint, it's becoming a bit of a crisis as to how we meet the needs, these very unique needs mm-hmm. of people who choose to age in place. And we get it. I understand. And I'm sure that I will be one of those who are planting my feet saying, as long as I can, you know, I want to stay here. But with that comes a requirement for lots of things. And among those things, and what we were talking about before we went into the break, is a plan. It's one thing to say, I intend to stay here. It's another to say, I intend to stay here, and I've not considered the possibility that anything could intervene to make that no longer practical. So it's okay to plant your feet, but plant them with a plan. Mm-hmm. So as we went into the break, the question was, you know, we were talking generally about what documents are important, and those of you who listen to the show regularly know that I'm emphatic that you should have a durable power of attorney for health care. You should have a durable power of attorney generally, often just called a durable power of attorney, which is for health and financial and legal stuff. So everything that doesn't pick up by the health care questions is covered by your general durable power of attorney. So as to who you choose, lawyers often don't seek that role because they just feel that perhaps it demands a lot of time and familiarity that they may not be able to give. I love to see clients identify someone first in their family, mm-hmm. if there is someone. Absent that, I'll ask clients, you know, many of my clients go to church or they have some church affiliation, but I'll ask clients, if they have a spiritual family, is there some place where they worship? Because mm-hmm. that often will bring to mind someone who they trust and who might be inclined to give the necessary time. And often it's not great. It depends. But often it doesn't require a lot of you to be the agent under a durable power of attorney. But beyond that, there is no rule. There's no rule. But it needs to be someone who, number one, they're trustworthy. Mm-hmm. That's probably the most important element, even more than having good judgment. Because if they have good judgment and they're dishonest, that just positions them to do more harm.
Yeah.
So if they're
a family member, but not as trustworthy as you might want them to be, maybe you don't do the extended family member.
Yeah, yeah. I think the trust is really the most important factor, but even trust is not enough, of course. They need to have good judgment, but they don't need to have a business degree. They don't need to be a lawyer. They don't need to be a doctor.
Good with money, though?
You would want them to have good judgment. When I say good judgment, yeah, I would want to pick up that they have some common sense because they do have access to all your assets. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, people say, well, gee, do I want to give anyone this authority? But there's no alternative if you want to have somebody who can pick up and care for you and meet your needs during a period that you can't. It puts you in a position where you have to trust somebody. Mm-hmm. But it's not blind faith. I mean, the law imposes a grave responsibility on these people. It's that they're fiduciaries, and the consequences are harsh if they breach that trust. And often the way that's brought to the attention of a court is through some third party. Or it may be that after you've passed away, the personal representative of your estate suddenly looks and sees that this person has misbehaved in some way, and they're the ones who may perhaps launch an action. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if you're giving someone a blank check and that there's no responsibility. But I'll tell you this: it's a pretty broad range of scope of discretion. Mm. So while they're obliged to make decisions for you, they can make those decisions along a wide range of options.
What happens if you have not done your due diligence and you do not have these documents in place? And, you know, we all know someone where a crisis hits. And I think that's always the fear. But I think none of us think we're going to have that. I mean, I don't, you know, I know plenty of people who go, yeah, well, it's, you know, I'm fine now. And but then there's this crisis. And if you're unable to speak for yourself, then the hospital is making these decisions, or do they contact someone else, or what?
Yeah, the hospital doesn't want to make them either.
Right.
So depending on the magnitude of the decision, sometimes hospitals have brought actions for the appointment of a guardian or conservator where they feel they're being put in a position to make a decision. They don't want to make it, or they see that there's a family dispute and the hospital is kind of caught footing the bill while this dispute is mm-hmm. sort of spinning out of control. So sometimes they will initiate an action. Other times it'll be a family member. And often it may even be the person who's very close to them that is used to maybe making many of their decisions for them. They thought, well, I've done this so far, so why would it ever change? But they find out when the person is incompetent that there's many things that they're a complete stranger to. They have no more access to those things than I would mm-hmm. to them. So the law says under those conditions, you have to have some legal authority. Now, that can come in the form of signing a durable power of attorney, which is simple, easy, inexpensive, or it can come in the form of litigation in a courthouse where you have experts testifying, family members arguing, maybe others arguing. It's slow, it's clunky, it's very inefficient. It means now you have the court having to supervise decisions. Some people may be thinking, oh, well, I'd rather have a judge supervise them. Well, I agree with you if the person is Madoff, but absent somebody who's a crook, I can tell you it's very cumbersome. And it slows things down, and it consumes a significant part of your estate. It's not something you want if you can avoid it. But I agree, if the alternative is a dishonest person, then I guess that's what you have to have, is a judge that's supervising decisions, inefficient as that is.
Yeah, it sounds like that's just not the way we want to do it. But I know from personal experience and from many people that I know, it's just not easy to take that time. But it's a new year. We're starting 2019. Christmas is over. So maybe now is the time to actually go ahead and get all of these documents in place, meet with an attorney, lay out a plan. It's, you know, like you've said, it doesn't have to be this big, huge, long ordeal.
Well, and a lot of people think that they can take care of it tomorrow. They think, many do, that whenever someone talks about estate planning, that they're talking about something that's going to have no bearing on the life of the planner, but instead is, meaning the client, but instead is something that's entirely for the benefit of your loved ones. And some people just don't get real motivated about that, particularly if their family's self-sufficient or they don't have family.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they're not motivated by the phrase estate planning. And
right.
I get that. But I think that what elder law does in its perspective, which is a little different from traditional estate planning, is elder law, I think its distinguishing characteristic, if there's a single distinguishing characteristic, is it's that its focus is first on the balance of the client's life, meaning how do we assure proper care, health care, how do we assure proper decision making regarding the financial and other matters. You know, what will be the living arrangements? What will be the sources of support?
Let's reiterate that, because when I honestly, I'm going to tell the truth, when I hear the word elder law, I think estate planning sometimes. Now, I've been doing this a while, so hopefully I don't still think that.
That's scary to think.
I know, but
say
that again, that the main focus is for the balance of your life, not the balance of your estate, not the balance of your children's lives or your anything like that. It's the balance of your life.
Yeah, and that's the reason I'm doing this show and the reason you helped me do this show is I really enjoy this topic. This is my dog, Scout, who is a Belgian Malinois that you hear in the background. I apologize. Anyway, I really enjoy this doing this show in part because the idea of working with people as they age, I find interesting, I find challenging, I find fulfilling. So some people say, well, gee, why didn't you just keep doing divorce law? And I said, well, this is just much more satisfying to me at this stage of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it because the conversations are about the sort of things we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about complex estate plans that minimize estate taxes and multi-generation trusts. Not that there's not a place for that. And in fact, our clients also will want to talk about having a plan in place for when they pass away. So certainly those things need to be considered and answered. But what led us into this topic was, what is elder law? And elder law's most distinguishing characteristic is that focus on the balance of the person's life, first and foremost. Then let's talk about what they want to do with their stuff thereafter. Because there's lots to talk about the balance of your life. Mm-hmm. I mean, particularly under the circumstances we've been talking about in this show. I mean, a host of questions are raised that deserve some forethought. And people who say, I just want to carry on and I don't want to be bothered by thinking about these things, it's an invitation to a crisis down the road, a crisis which they may be entirely swept along by events. They may have no ability to participate in what happens thereafter. So the important thing for people, especially as they age, is that they decide at that when they still can, that I want to make some decisions about where I will live, how I will live. I want to be sure that the quality of health care I get will be what I want. I want to think about where my finances will come from. I want to place my money with people with whom I trust. And all those decisions are things that by participating with an elder law attorney at a time when you still can, then you get to go through the balance of your life knowing that there is a plan, and whatever is thrown from left field is something for which you're going to be prepared. And also, these same clients, they do want a plan for when they pass away. They do want, most of them, it's a priority, but with some, it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have clients who say, you know, my kids are fine. Oh, let's give it to charity. Let's mm-hmm. give it to a church. But even for those where it is a priority, I still want to talk first about the balance of the client's life to assure that all those critical pieces are in place. And if they're in place, then we can move on and talk about those other things. But that's the proper order, in my opinion, for planning for the lives of people as they age. And that's what elder law is.
Well, you mentioned that one of the main focuses that you have is where they will live. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because as we've been talking about people that are elder orphans, one of the things that they often will consider is moving to a community that might be a little bit more friendly. For example, if you can't drive, maybe it's a good idea to consider moving to a place where a lot of stuff is within walking distance.
Yeah, and that's the sort of planning that people can do. And you're right, it there are things that with enough planning we can anticipate some of the problems that might arise in the future, so we don't have to meet them when they come because we've already planned for that. And moving to a place where you can walk rather than having to drive, that's important.
Right, there are actually some cities that there's a list
that are walking friendly.
That are walking friendly. Top 20 large cities for moving when you are an elder uh-huh. orphan.
You don't have to drive.
Right. Provo, Utah. Madison,
now
are
they talking specifically
Wisconsin?
About older people or
yes.
young people?
Older people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Durham, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Salt Lake City, Des Moines, West Des Moines area, which I have relatives there. Austin Rock, Texas. I mean, there's some
Austin
big...
Rock?
Yeah, that's what it says. Austin Round Rock, Texas.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Omaha, Council Bluffs in Nebraska and Iowa. So there are a lot of different places that it might be worth your while to investigate moving.
So what was the first one? Provo, Utah?
Provo, Utah. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Big city. And then they break it down into small cities as well. Top 20 small cities. Iowa City, Iowa. Iowa seems to be a place where there's a lot
yeah.
of...
And cost of living's low.
Cost of living is low. Manhattan, Kansas. Ames, Iowa.
I know Manhattan, Kansas.
Here's one, number four on the list. Columbia, Missouri.
Well, you know, that doesn't surprise me that much. Have you noticed how Columbia, Missouri pops up on a lot of these lists? Quality of life and all that?
Well, think about it. A lot of college students are not necessarily driving their cars everywhere. They're walking places.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason it makes it on the list of places to retire mm-hmm. is that, in addition to being the walkability factor, mm-hmm. but also that you have this dynamic environment where when you have young people around, you tend to have lots of activities. Mm-hmm. You have the university to draw from, so mm-hmm. you have lectures coming in and educational opportunities for older people, which I think they have a program specifically for older people there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they do. And the other thing that this looked at was for indoor and outdoor recreational activities, healthy and active culture. Smoking and drinking rates are low. So these are the places you want to go
if
you want to live a long time.
Well, what if you smoke and drink? I guess you want to go somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Probably not Provo, Utah.
Probably not. That might be more the Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah.
For the drinking part, I don't know.
Well, but I think that the message from today is that these things do require a plan. And it's worthwhile to think about aging in place. We're probably not going to change any listeners' minds on that, nor would I want to.
Mm-hmm.
But I would point out that these continuing care retirement communities do have a certain appeal. And they're especially valuable, I think, for people who want to go ahead and move while they still can and not wait until they have to, but go ahead and make that change into a place that they intend to become home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same thing as the complaint of the person who says, I want to age in place. Their complaint is, I don't want to suddenly be taking out kicking and screaming and moved into a nursing home
mm-hmm.
or even moved into an assisted living facility. So I think if you were to say to that person, what if you established home somewhere else
mm-hmm.
while you can still enjoy it, it's a meaningful home, and then you stay in that general community.
Well, and I think that one of the big things is people don't want the change. I think it's plain and simple. It's change. And I think it's also an acceptance of my life is changing. And I am not able to maybe do quite as much as I was. I'm giving away stuff. I'm giving away things that I've spent my entire life accumulating that hold special value to me.
Mm-hmm.
They may not to the other people, but that's still, it's your life. And it feels like maybe you're losing a little bit of your life when you do that. And so I think it's just we have to look at things practically. And we mm-hmm. have to say, you know, the benefit is I'm going to have friends. I'm not going to be alone. I'm going to have someone who's maybe going to play bunco with me every Monday
really,
night.
Really, a more active environment.
Yes, it actually is. And some of the ones that I've toured, you know, they have rails on the wall so that if you're a little bit unsteady, you just go right there. You don't have to worry as much about a fall because mm-hmm. as you're walking, there's a little rail and you're making connections and reconnecting with other people. I mean, there are a lot of positives to that.
There are just so many nice places in town that will let you, it may not be the full continuing care retirement community, though those are around, but those that will at least let you progress from assisted living to skilled care.
Mm-hmm.
There are just a lot of nice facilities that are worth looking at. And there are different deals with each place. Used to, the expectation was a chunk of money on the front end. I mean, that was standard, a big mm-hmm. chunk of money. Then there started becoming pricing models that were very different, ones where you put nothing down.
Mm-hmm.
I was specifically looking at these in conjunction with a family member where one option was a $400,000 down payment. I won't mention names here, $400,000 down payment and relatively small payments thereafter with a part that's refundable depending mm-hmm. on how long they stay. And by contrast, there's another facility equally as nice.
Mm-hmm.
Both these are comparable tiered price points, in which case you just pay monthly, mm-hmm. substantially more. I think that was, what was it, $6,000
a month.
For $5,000 to $6,000 a month for assisted living. And you pay monthly, and it is a la carte, so you are choosing different services, and it can cost you more, but you don't put down a chunk of money on the front end. So there are a range of options. You know, the problem is, Susan, we need a couple of hours to talk about this topic.
We're about out of time.
So I guess then what we'll do, we have coming up, we're going to have a guest on to talk specifically about healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So just I want to dangle this for those listening. That we're lining up someone who's going to come and talk about what are the best supplements for people to take as they age. And this is somebody who's a pharmacist and somebody who has wonderful credentials to tell us about mm-hmm. these things. So we're looking forward to this show. And again, I expect it to be helpful to you and hopefully entertaining as well. So we've gone through another episode quickly here. We look forward to talking to you again. Another episode of Elder Talk. Take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.